Okay, we're ready to go. You may want to stick around for this case. This is an exciting case. It's a criminal case with a defense attorney and a prosecutor. This is case number 65431, Amy Bessie versus the state of Nevada. With Mr. Klaus for the appellant, Mr. Martinez for the district attorney's office for the state of Nevada, respondent. And what I do, fellas, is I allow you to, a few minutes to talk to the audience about what the facts of the case are so that you don't have to worry about the facts when you argue to us. You'll have your full 15 minutes each. So, Mr. Klaus, would you, and you can face the audience rather than us, take the microphone and let them know what the facts of this case, and then Mr. Martinez, you'll do the same thing from the state's point of view. You'll take the microphone, and then we'll give you each your 15 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Too much personality.
Murder most foul, or at least criminal murder, that is the subject of this case. And the defense attorney in law is the second chair on this case. There were two attorneys on the state side prosecuting as well. I walked from one trial into this trial. And what interested me prior to it was, ladies and gentlemen, short description. There was a marriage that went bad. Amy Bessie was married to Robert Bessie. Robert Bessie was undisputably an abusive individual who had beaten Amy Bessie at least once, including her child, and had threatened both her and her family members, their son, with a firearm in her hands several times. At the conclusion of these events, Robert Bessie thought it best to remove himself from the house. And in any event, they filed for divorce. During the divorce proceedings, it is alleged that she propositioned several people to kill Robert Bessie, using what she would hope to gain in terms of insurance proceeds. So it was a $250,000 death benefit that was at issue. Courtney Smith is the name you'll hear. This is the person who is most often proposition. She was the one who testified at trial, and ultimately, Courtney Smith attempts to murder Robert Bessie, is what we proposed, and she did that with the son, Michael Bessie. However, that's not the subject of criminal prosecution. There was a case that comes, this case, and it's passed a few months later, when Robert Bessie is driving to his work in the morning on the I-15 highway from Loganville. As he's driving along, an SUV pulls up beside him and shoots at him. The occupants of this SUV were identified as Michael Bessie and Rick Pearson, the brother and the son of Amy Bessie. There is a text message that is sent by Rick Pearson, love and planning on his gift, but ultimately is also one of the subjects of discussion here. So the facts are aimed at in Las Vegas. The shooting takes place in Loganville or thereabouts. And the state's theory is that she orchestrated the entirety of this and presents witnesses to that effect. The defense was, to be perfectly frank, very careless, but was required to make a thin thread in the fact to say no. She certainly had no love loss. But it was Michael Bessie, Rick Pearson, who had seen the abuse, heard of the abuse, who acted on the wrong. Thank you.
And now Clark County's answer to Jack McCoy from Law and Order, Mr. Martinez.
I appreciate that. That's why I was in law school, because of Jack McCoy. My name is Clark Martinez. I'm with Clark County DA's office. I'm with the Special Victims Unit. I primarily have to track cases. This trial took place way before I got on the Special Victims Unit. On Monday this week, it marked the 4-year anniversary of Robert Bessie driving to work southbound on I-15 on his way to Apex. He got shot in the back of the head. And a bullet was lodged in the back of his neck while he was driving. And miraculously, he stayed calm. driving to Apex from Logan. He lives in Logan Hill, and he's driving to the job in Los Angeles Game Forwards. And he runs away, got by my team, and it's dark outside. He's in a left-hand lane. He's going about 85 miles per hour. And as he's driving, he notices kind of a flash of headlights turning. He thinks it's a highway patrol officer. And this vehicle behind him is fast and rapidly approaching. So he pulls over to the right lane to let the car go by. He's hoping that it's not a highway patrol officer because he was speeding and he might get a ticket. The other car, and he knows it was a gold SUV, it stayed in his blind spot for a couple of minutes, and he decided to turn and look, and as he was turning his neck, he heard a loud pop, and then a really sharp pain in the back of his neck. He puts his hand over his neck, and he feels it as wet, looks at his hand, there's blood. And then he starts feeling it again, and he can feel a metal object in the back of his head. And that's when he pulled over, called 911, said that the guy was shot. The next phone call that he makes was to his job. And I don't think I can even work today. Why not? And I've been shot in the head. Instead, get everybody in here, but it's not going to work. But he didn't really believe him. He's still being called all over the news. Highway Patrol responds. He gets taken to the hospital, and detectives start their investigation. Detective Lee Majors starts his interview with Michael and gets some facts about family, about what's going on, and he learns that he's in the midst of the messy divorce, and there's $250,000 and there's extensive investigation done, and it turns out that they investigated, and the jury convicted the investigator of firing, convincing her son, Michael, and her brother, Rick, to kill Robert Best for that $250,000. She wasn't working, she was destitute, she was desperate for money. It was a volatile relationship, no doubt about that. Violence that Mr. Claus references back and forth happened in the summer of 2012. This shooting happened on November 12th, November 14th, 2012. 14th? Just Monday, 4 years ago. So we went to trial about a year later. And it took about 9 days to try. A lot of witnesses, a lot of back and forth. And the jury and the convicting investigators got murdered with deadly weapons, conspiracy to murder, discharging a firearm out of a vehicle, discharging a firearm at or into a vehicle. You may ask yourself, how did she know this thing that she was in Las Vegas and this is happening on the way to Logan? Well, the law says that if you are part of a conspiracy, or you aid or abet someone who directly commits a crime, it's as if you are committing a crime. And so she was just as liable as Rick and Michael were for actually shooting Robert, even though she was all the way in Las Vegas. So that's my second story.
Thank you. Ready to proceed? You have 15 minutes. Did you want to save some time for rebuttal?
Yes, please. Chief Justice Turner, may I reserve 5 minutes, please?
Okay, so you argue for 10, he'll reserve 5, and then the district attorney will argue for 15, and then you'll have 5 for rebuttal.
And Justice Douglas, perhaps I get to supply the coin. In any event, honorable justices, thank you for this opportunity to address you. For the purpose of this oral argument, I have chosen to focus on 3 primary errors that I felt resulted in Amy Bessie's improper conviction in the district court. Any one of these would be sufficient, I believe, and would put to you to warrant reversal. First, the state's improper opening and the failure to issue a cautionary instruction. Second, the state's improper introduction of expert insurance testimony without proper notice, and who by someone who is patently not an expert. And third, the denial of judicial recognition of Courtney Smith as warranting the accomplice instruction. Now, this was very important, Your Honor, and frankly, the last will go first here. Courtney Smith was, as alleged by the state, a co-conspirator in a previous murder attempt. And if I can, Justices, I'd like to start out this argument with the appellate's appendix 2290, jury instruction number 23. Conspiracy is an agreement or mutual understanding between two or more persons to commit a crime. To be guilty of a conspiracy, a defendant must intend to commit or aid in the commission of the specific crime agreed to. The crime is the agreement to do something unlawful. It does not matter whether it is successful or not. It is not necessary in proving a conspiracy to show a meeting of the alleged co-conspirators or the making of an express or formal agreement. The formation and existence of a conspiracy may be inferred from all circumstances tending to show the common intent and may be proved the same way as any other fact to be proved. Now, this was a jury instruction, Your Honor, that was given in the Bessie case, but it is reflective of conspiracy as it states, as it stands as a law in total. This is the law that the state has requested and achieved in conspiracy instructions. In the amended information that was filed on November 15th and read to the jury, Appellate's Appendix 2245, count one, that Amy Bessie did then there and meet with Michael Bessie and Richard Bessie and between themselves and each of the other willfully and lawfully and feloniously conspire and agree to commit a crime, to wit, as set forth in count two. Count two was Amy Bessie did then there without authority of law, malice aforethought, willfully and feloniously attempt to kill Robert Bessie, a human being, with a deadly weapon by subsection two, aiding or abetting in the commission of this crime with the specific intent that this crime be committed by providing counsel and or encouragement and or by entering into a course of conduct whereby Amy Bessie, also known as Amy Denise Pearson, Michael Bessie, and Richard Pearson together with one another planned said murder and or in the alternative, Amy Bessie, also known as Amy Denise Pearson, offering the said Michael Bessie and or Richard Pearson a share of the insurance proceeds expected to result from the murder of Robert Bessie. And now finally, turning your attention, please, Your Honors, with your indulgence to page 13 of the state's responding brief. Second paragraph, subsequent to Bessie's arrest, detectives learned of Bessie's previous efforts to enlist Smith to kill Robert. In addition to the charges Bessie faced in this case, the case at bar, she and Smith were then charged with a previous attempt on Robert's life in that separate case, 13-FN-0695. After Smith was arrested and in custody, Bessie told her to keep her mouth shut and deny everything. But Smith subsequently entered into a negotiation in 13-FN-0695 that contemplated an agreement to testify against Bessie in this case. And finally, Your Honor, turning to page 42 of the state's own brief, second paragraph, the charges in that case, referring to 13-FN-0695, related to information detectives had received that Smith had agreed to try and kill Robert on June 17th via a poisoned Red Bull for an amount of $50,000, a share of the insurance proceeds. So what we have in this case, Your Honor, with Courtney Smith is someone who had just a few months prior, by her own testimony, attempted to give Robert Bessie a poisoned Red Bull, attempted to murder him. She was subsequently charged with this. By her own testimony, Ms. Courtney Smith testified that she conspired with Amy Bessie to do this. And she admitted that Michael Bessie was also present waiting in the car when she was attempting to give this poisoned Red Bull to Mr. Robert Bessie. The same actors, the same goal, the goal of this conspiracy, the murder or attempted murder in this case of Robert Bessie.
Was Amy involved, any evidence she was involved with the shooting on Interstate 15?
No, Your Honor. Shockingly, she disclaimed all knowledge of that. She indicated in other uncorroborated statements that Amy Bessie had solicited her to try and get her father to kill Robert Bessie, that Amy Bessie had supplied this had offered to supply this girl with a gun, conveniently, that matched the description that the police were looking for that had been used in this effect, though she couldn't say the exact date. And yet, after declining all of these solicitations or invitations to conspire to commit to murder Robert Bessie, she then entered into a conspiracy on or about, I believe it was June 15th of 2012, to actually attempt to murder Robert Bessie. This is the person upon which the state hung most of its case. This is the person who gave uncorroborated testimony stating that Courtney had specifically moved in to the house to provide protection for Amy Bessie after the domestic violence incidents in late May of 2012, that Courtney Smith had been approached about the proceeds of the life insurance policy by Amy Bessie, that Courtney Smith had been approached to conspire to solicit Courtney Smith's father to kill Robert Bessie. This, she admitted, was an uncorroborated statement. Appellate's appendix 1236. She also proffered other uncorroborated statements that Amy Bessie asked Courtney Smith directly to kill him, to kill Robert Bessie, excuse me, with a gun that she would supply.
Mr. Claus, are you saying that the state should have had a trial within the trial, in other words, to show that Courtney actually testified to was the fact? In other words, to have to show that she did conspire to kill Bessie.
Your Honor, I don't think that a trial within a trial was even necessary here because the state admitted these facts itself. These were uncontroverted facts. The state had, in fact, charged Courtney Smith with this attempted murder with Amy Bessie in that earlier North Las Vegas case.
So what particular is the error that occurred with the Courtney Smith testimony? Is it the fact that there wasn't a jury instruction saying she was that her testimony had to be corroborated?
Exactly.
Otherwise,
it
could have been ignored.
Exactly, Your Honor. And that is the problem which is most key in Courtney Smith's case, because even by the plain text of reading the transcript, you will find that she admits that a great many, including the two instances that I gave to you, were uncorroborated testimony. Now, the state says, well, these were part of a solicitation to commit murder scheme. Therefore, they were admissible in order to avoid running into the Petruccelli error. And the state says, we didn't ask for Petruccelli. But to be perfectly frank, Your Honor, you know how that works. The state must move for the Petruccelli hearing. The only way they got around that is by saying that these prior incidences were actually part of the case in chief. But they wanted to create an artificial distinction between the conspiracies that existed in June of 2012 to November of 2012, even though Courtney Smith had taken none of the steps as outlined in Orfield v. State to distance herself from the conspiracy, to report the conspiracy to law enforcement. And she only came forward with these statements after she herself had been charged and gave a proffer to support the state's point of view.
And Judge Barker still allowed Courtney's testimony, I understand, without that instruction. Was your client had requested that instruction from the court and the judge wouldn't give it?
Numerous times, Your Honor. In fact, we had an argument about that. And this is where the standard of review, I think, becomes a little muddled. The district court very clearly said that it had read the Orfield decision and did not see the broadening language that comes from the Potter case, I believe, that's directly quoted in Orfield. The court solely directed its attention to the pure language of NRS 175.291, and that was improper.
Mr. Claus, I know we're getting close to 5 minutes. You mentioned the life insurance issue at the beginning of your argument. Wouldn't the life insurance information be relevant to show motive of Amy to want her husband killed then?
And indeed it was, Your Honor. As practitioners, we know that motive doesn't necessarily need to be proven to have legal culpability. However, it is a powerful factor that the jury uses in determining innocence or guilt. And in this particular instance, what happened is the state knew that. They knew it in their opening, they knew it in their closing, and yet they had noticed no one on that subject. When the time came for the state to prove that, the state used a custodian of records that had only been noticed as such from an insurance company to prove and sit as an expert witness on what the effect of the Robert Bessie's policy would be and who it would devolve to. However, this witness on cross-examination testified that she had no expertise in either trust or, frankly, insurance law. She came there as a custodian of record. Now, we objected to that. However, the judge in this case very particularly, while recognizing our objection and sustaining it for what it was, also in the same breath, in the same bench conference, told the state, well, ask it this way. Ask what the effect of Nevada law is on this insurance policy in particular. Not in general, but in particular. That, Your Honor, is clearly the subject of expert testimony, and I addressed that in the reply. And finally, Your Honor, the opening statement. While there is no bad faith in the opening statement, and I'm not averring that the state did something nefarious, what I am alleging, Your Honor, and what I am averring is that we objected to the introduction of the text message, which was clearly inculpatory or meant to be inculpatory, even though it was being sent by one co-conspirator purportedly to another. And there is, if you will forgive me, an alternative explanation for that text message. Regardless, we raised foundational grounds. The state made a proffer, and in the state's answering brief, they said, we never fleshed out the proffer for the foundational question. We only dealt with its admissibility on discovery grounds. And while that is true, that is frankly analyzing the cart before the horse. Before any of this should have gotten in front of the jury in any way, shape, take, or form, it needed to have been given to other defense counsel, and here it clearly was not. After bringing all of the defense counsel in a semi-sequestered fashion, to get absolutely candid responses from them. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, before you sit down, as of the last point, was a standard jury instruction given that what's offered in opening statement or closing are not facts or just argument?
Yes, Your Honor, the general jury instruction was given. However, I would rejoin to that this was one of the first things that the jury saw, and a cautionary instruction was necessary to overcome.
In the closing argument or in the defense opening, did defense contest that issue at all?
Contest what issue, Your Honor? I'm sorry.
The issue that you're complaining of, did you explain it away or did you attempt to make any comment?
Well, we attempted to use the jury instructions that we'd been given, Your Honor, including the general jury instructions that openings are not facts. However, Your Honor, that is a general jury instruction. While it's used in every trial, in my experience, to the extent that you have an issue like this that is so brazenly raised in front of the jury and promised them so prominently in their first few moments of experience with the case, you must confront that issue and tell the jury that in no uncertain terms, with the imprimatur of the court standing behind you, that this information cannot be relied upon them in the jury instructions because, frankly, Your Honor, what we say in closings isn't evidence either. Thank you.
I'll give you a couple extra minutes on the rebuttal. And, Ms. Martinez, I'll give you 17 minutes.
May it please the Court, I'm Sam Martinez with the DA's office on behalf of the respondent in the state of Nevada, and I too am grateful for this opportunity to be at Valley High School and make this argument. I'd like to address some of the arguments made by Mr. Claus regarding Courtney Smith and the difference between a co-conspirator and an accomplice. I think they are different, and it was never alleged in trial that Courtney Smith conspired with Amy Bessie to shoot Robert Bessie. There were no facts to support it. There were no facts presented. And Courtney Smith's conduct in the previous case did not rise to the level of being a co-conspirator in the case at trial. What's important for this court to know is the timing of the charges in the North Las Vegas case where Courtney Smith was charged initially with the attempted murder by poison. Once she was charged, and Amy Bessie was also charged in that case, once she was charged, a proffer was done and an agreement to testify was reached. certain facts were provided by Courtney Smith in that proffer that gave rise to amending the criminal complaint in the present case before you at the justice court level of adding solicitation to commit murder charges. The facts never, Courtney Smith never admitted to attempting to poison Robert. She denied that, in fact. She did admit that on behalf of Amy Bessie, she did go to Robert's house and provide him an energy drink as a Father's Day's gift from the family and with an invitation to go and have dinner with the family, despite the fact that there was a TPO. He declined the invitation, but there was never any allegation at trial, and Courtney Smith denied, again, ever attempting to poison Robert Bessie.
What's the status of the Courtney Smith supposedly being a conspirator, though? The state objected to giving an instruction that her testimony had to be corroborated?
The state objected to the accomplice testimony jury instruction because the state does not believe that Courtney Smith was an accomplice to the shooting of Robert Bessie in the head.
Have to look at it that narrowly, that she was an accomplice as to the shooting, opposed to the general supposition that she was an accomplishment in the attempt, general intent, to kill the party?
She, based on her testimony, there was no evidence, and the testimony presented at trial, there was no evidence presented that she was a part of the conspiracy to shoot Robert. And she always denied attempting to poison him. And so, in fact, her plea reflects what she testified to. And
what she pled to?
She pled to an accessory to commit a felony. And specifically, and this was after the proffer, and her denial, and her set of facts convinced the state of her version, and that's what she testified to, and that's the theory that the state went on. And she specifically pled to having knowledge of the fact that Amy Bessie attempted to kill Robert Bessie and solicited her. Let me go back. She pled to the fact that she had knowledge of Amy Bessie's intent to kill Robert Bessie, to shoot Robert Bessie, and she didn't report that to authorities.
Why won't Petruccelli come into play then? Why isn't it just like evidence of the, you take the Courtney Smith and the Bessie situation as a solicitation to commit murder, it's evidence of another crime, and that way the state would have to prove by clear and convincing evidence that this occurred before it could even be admitted. Why was it a win at all costs for the DA not to do a Petruccelli hearing?
Well, Your Honor, a Petruccelli hearing wouldn't be required in this case because the state didn't present any evidence of the North Las Vegas case or any facts or circumstances surrounding any attempted poison. What the state presented was facts related to the solicitation to commit murder to Courtney Smith. So Amy Bessie offered Courtney Smith $50,000 to kill Robert, to shoot Robert. She then offered her money to convince her father, who was Special Forces, to kill Robert. She declined on both of those occasions. So there was a solicitation to commit murder charged in the actual crime. So that's not evidence of a bad act.
So the charges were solicitation, conspiracy, and attempted murder then?
Correct. They were conspiracy, attempted murder, and solicitation.
So they weren't on Petruccelli, the uncharged acts. Here these were charged acts.
Correct. Okay. So all the evidence that was presented were based on the charged facts. And Petruccelli would have to be applied to uncharged bad acts, where the court would have to weigh the probative value versus the prejudicial effect.
What did the information say about solicitation? Amy was convicted of solicitation.
That's correct.
What did the charge say as far as her solicitation is concerned? What did the charge say?
There were two solicitations to commit murder. Are you referring to just precisely on Courtney Smith or to...
No, what she was charged with in her case, the Amy Bessie case.
In the Amy Bessie case, she was charged with offering $50,000 to Courtney Smith to kill Robert Bessie. And what she testified to was that Amy Bessie approached her and told her about the life insurance policy and said, if you kill Robert, I will give you $50,000 of those proceeds. She declined the invitation. Later, she invites her to convince her dad to kill Robert Bessie.
So why is Courtney Smith guilty of anything? How did you proceed against Courtney Smith under the facts that you're charging a solicitation of Amy with Amy Bessie, but Courtney Smith never tried to kill Bessie? You understand what I'm saying?
I understand that. And so the timing of the initial charges is important. So when we filed charges in the North Las Vegas case for the attempt murder by poison, we had information from witnesses about things that Courtney Smith said regarding an attempted poison of Robert Bessie. Those witness statements gave rise to the initial charges of attempt murder by poison and administered poison for Amy Bessie and Courtney Smith. So after those charges were filed, a proffer was conducted with Courtney Smith. She cooperated and provided information that conflicted with the state's initial theory of the attempted murder by poison. We essentially believed her version of events, and she denied trying to poison her. So what ended up happening is, through prosecutorial discretion, we instead had her plead to accessory to commit a felony, which was to not report the facts that she knew about Amy Bessie's involvement in Robert's shooting, not administering the poison, not being involved with the murder itself. She isn't charged. She didn't plead to any sort of conspiracy with Amy Bessie.
So if someone would say that, if we would say that that's error, that you didn't give either a Petrocelli hearing or a conspiracy instruction, the conspiracy instruction, why would it be harmless? Why is it harmless in this case?
Do you mean accomplice instruction?
Yeah, the accomplice testimony. In other words, we're saying, hey, you committed error, DA, by not either doing a Petrocelli hearing or doing that requested jury instruction on accomplice testimony. Why is it then harmless?
Well, I think it's harmless as far as the Petrocelli hearing is concerned, is because there were no bad acts that were presented to the jury that weren't charged. So there was no any error with regards to not doing a Petrocelli hearing would be harmless because there were no bad acts that were presented to the jury that weren't charged. As far as the accomplice testimony instruction, if this court were to find that Courtney Smith was an accomplice, even though the state's position is she was not involved in the actual shooting of Robert Bessie, there was corroborating evidence of Courtney Smith's testimony, of things that Courtney Smith, of the things that Amy Bessie did as far as her intent to kill Robert Bessie. For one, Robert Bessie got shot in the back of the head.
Not poisoned.
Two, there was a life insurance policy, $250,000, and she was offered some of those proceeds, and which she ultimately declined the invitation to accept those to kill Robert Bessie. So I think there were a number of facts that were given that actually corroborated Courtney Smith's testimony, but the state's position is that she was not an accomplice in the first place because she was not involved whatsoever in the shooting of Robert Bessie.
Any comment as to the point raised by counsel as the opening statement and the text message?
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. As this court is aware, the standard is, was there a good faith basis by the state to present that text message, the information related to that text message in opening statement? Prior to the jury hearing that text message in a hearing outside the presence of the jury, Judge Barker asked the state to present its opening PowerPoint. And the defense objected on foundational grounds. And so the judge asked us to proffer what where the foundation was coming from to support the text message. There was argument given with regards to that foundation, and Judge Barker ultimately ruled the state does have a good faith basis to present that text message. So it doesn't get any better faith than that when the trial court judge tells you you have a good faith basis to present that text message, and then we, outside the presence of the jury, and it's not a surprise to the defense, we ultimately presented that text message in the opening statement. And the jury, with regards to jury...
Ignore that.
Okay. With regards to the jury instructions, the court is absolutely right in stating that the jury is instructed that arguments of counsel are not evidence. And I believe that a jury is presumed to follow the court's instructions. And so they were properly instructed on that.
What happened in trial that it wasn't given to the jury, though, the text message?
There was a discovery issue that came about, unbeknownst to the state and the defense, with regards to the disclosure of that particular text message. When Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department recovered the defendant's phone, Amy Bessie's phone, Rick Pearson's phone, they obtained a search warrant and extracted the information from their phones. I can't remember what kind of phones they were, but there was so much data, gigabytes and gigabytes of data, that we could not fit that information, that report, on one disk. So our discovery department copied that large amount of data, or attempted to, on three or four separate disks. And it was checked to make sure that the content was there. Every single piece of content, however, I will admit, was not checked, and I would still be trying to check it today. It's such a large amount. But we were able to see the cover page of the report, and there was data that was retrieved. And so when we turned that information over to the defense, those disks, we, in good faith, believed that that text message was on there. I know that we had discussed it with defense counsel on multiple occasions when discussing plea negotiations and things of that nature. Wasn't a surprise to Mr. Beckstead. So that's how it came about. We decided ultimately, as a part of our strategy, to not use the text message at trial, just to protect the record, I guess, and the court ultimately ruled that we weren't going to be using that text message anyway. So we never referenced it in our case in chief. It was never referenced in our closing argument. It was never mentioned again. So I think going back, there was a good faith basis to present that in opening argument, and the jury was instructed that arguments are not, I'm sorry, opening statement, and statements of counsel aren't evidence.
You still have 2 minutes left.
Okay. As far as the expert claim by defense counsel, as far as the custodian of records for the life insurance policy, she was not only a custodian of record, but she's a lay witness. She was a percipient witness. She did not render any expert or legal opinions. That was never elicited. She was simply asked what the content of the life insurance policy was, or the lack thereof, and there was nothing in the life insurance policy that struck Amy Bessie as a beneficiary of that life insurance policy. And
so was Amy the primary beneficiary of the policy?
There was a Bessie family trust, and Robert Bessie and Amy Bessie were the beneficiaries of that.
So Robert was dead, Amy would get 100%.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
So how could this witness testify to anything, though? I mean, who is this witness?
She's a custodian of record for the life insurance company, and she had before her a fair and accurate copy the entirety of the life insurance policy. So she testified to what the contents were.
Well, why should she testify? Isn't the document speak for itself? Did the document go into evidence? Did you move for it? So why would she ask her any questions? Who is she that she could answer any questions about an insurance policy? Well, custodian records aren't expert witnesses.
I agree with you on that, and we didn't elicit any expert testimony or expert opinions. She didn't give any legal opinions. She talked about what was contained within the life insurance policy and what was not there, and the result. Lay witnesses are allowed to give opinions if it aids the jury in understanding facts that are presented, and so we asked her questions because we thought it would assist the jury in understanding what the life insurance policy was about, as opposed to them having to go through and read it themselves. Thank you.
Pause. I'm going to give you 4 minutes.
Thank you, Justices. Not to be contrarian, however, I must respectfully disagree with the state on this last point. The state, in fact, did attempt to specifically elicit expert testimony. That is what drew the objection in front of the district court. That is what elicited and created the colloquy in front of Judge Barker, when ultimately the judge told them, this is how I believe you get that in. However, the objection for eliciting expert testimony from this witness was at least ostensibly sustained. That being said, Your Honor, the judge did take the extraordinary step of excluding the text message. And the reason for this, Your Honor, if you look through the record and you can see it, is, and I must confess, I walked from one trial to another. So when the state gave their exhibits and they said what was on the disk of text messages, I thought to myself, I must be going senile. I didn't see that in any of the discovery that I had previously viewed. I thought I'd made that manifest, but I must confess, Your Honors, it does not appear in the record for my objections to the opening statement. However, it stuck with me. And several days later, after viewing the disk, I told the court, Your Honor, we don't have these text messages. I've looked at everything that we have from the state. These text messages do not appear. And that began the long, drawn-out process where the court finally arrived at the conclusion of excluding that evidence. And it did not arrive at that conclusion lightly. I spent a very hectic weekend trying to find an expert to look at cell phones, because now this evidence, that while very voluminous, did not appear to be incredibly inculpatory or distressing, now suddenly had become so. And we were unable to get that expert, and that is why the court took that extraordinary remedy. But it was because it was such an extraordinary allegation and piece of evidence.
When that occurred, did trial counsel move for mistrial?
No, Your Honor, we did not. That, I believe, was a decision made by first chair. Ultimately, the question was whether or not it was going to come in or not and what remedy the judge would give us. Your Honor, one final point. While I will not and have not averred bad faith on the state's behalf, I do not agree to good faith. It is their duty to produce that information. And while the state says that they did a proffer for the foundational purposes of including it in the opening statement, we never got to test that in court. It was when Tafoya, the expert for the state, for the cell phone records, was going to begin testifying that this issue really hit home, and the decision was made by the court to exclude that text message. And that, not last but not least, Your Honor, I believe you started with this, the solicitation to commit murder. Your Honor, we had to sanitize her Courtney Smith's testimony very carefully. And in doing so, we essentially took out the Red Bull reference that it was poisoned. However, both she and Robert Bessie alluded to the Red Bull being given to him by Courtney Smith. So, in an interesting twist of fate, the best corroboration of Courtney Smith's testimony disagrees with the state's view of events, that in point of fact, she did attempt to murder him and poison him with Red Bull. Now, we were placed in a very difficult position, and ultimately we sanitized that because of the ruling that we were given by the court that she was not being counted as an accomplice. So our ability of dealing with that issue was extraordinarily hamstrung.
But you did ask the judge to give an accomplice testimony instruction for Courtney Smith.
Multiple times, Your Honor.
And he refused. And the district attorney objected to that instruction being given?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And again, I believe you have de novo review here because the district court judge breached his decision based upon his reading of the Orfield case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Quas. Thank you, Mr. Martinez. This case will stand submitted. And, ladies and gentlemen, let's give these...